Now, to conclude, Thomas Mann matched Joyce in a very interesting way in his career. This has something to do with the whole process through the early 20th century of the arts. The 19th century was an outward-directed century, purely objective science, purely objective naturalism, if possible. There's no such thing as objectivity, actually, but people thought they were being objective. And then along comes the depth psychology, which was simply restating what had already been stated by Nietzsche and Schopenhauer and before that Goethe, that there is a spirit within which moves things and the outer apparitions are causally explained, perhaps, but there's a dynamism within which brings the causes together and so forth and so on. Mann's first novel, Buddenbrooks, was a family story, and the second work, the important thing that immediately followed that, was Tonio Kruger. This came out 1903. Just when Joyce was working on Stephen Hero. I've spoken of Joyce's aesthetic. Let me say a word of Thomas Mann's. Tonio was born in northern Germany in a place of blue-eyed blondes. But his mother was a Mediterranean woman, so he himself was dark-haired and dark-eyed, the isolated one. Another one who's isolated always has a way of feeling sorry for himself. And he's a little bit, you know, disdainful of those mere cattle round about, and don't have the interesting thoughts he has when he's alone. But also he envies them. And little Tonio fell in love with the two big, beautiful blondes, a beautiful girl, a beautiful boy, Hans and Ingeborg. But he can't live with them. They can't talk about the things he's interested in. So when he reaches the age of youth, he leaves and goes to Hippieville, which in those days was called Bohemia. There he finds himself among a lot of people who couldn't get along very well either. And they were of two types, those who fell down when they danced, and so were rather incompetent, and those who had great ideas and couldn't do very much either. An intellectual is a person who has a lot of ideas and doesn't do very well. And the mere square is the one who does very well quite easily and doesn't have any ideas. One idea is enough, and he lives a life on that. If you have two ideas, you're in trouble. You're in agony, existentialist angst, and to be or not to be, and all that sort of thing. If all you think of is to be, you're okay, kid. And if it's you get the not to be part in there, you're a philosopher. So he finds these people extremely adroit in saying nasty things about others. In other words, they were literary people. And he found that he was just as ill at ease in their highly disdainful circle as he had been in this other group that just were to be. So he finds himself between two worlds, zwischen zwei Welten, neither here nor there, the lost Bürger. And he writes back, after he left them, to this young Russian woman. Mann seems to have been rather taken by Russian girls early in his life, because they play a big role, Lizaveta, the slinky sort. He writes back to her why it is he left. And here's a key to an aesthetic. The word kills. It is the job of the intellectual to see, to identify, and to name. Now, what distinguishes one person from another is that each person's deviation from a norm. Nobody's perfect. So in describing anybody, what you describe are the faults. But perfection is not lovable. All the Buddhas are alike, and they have left the world not to live in it. If you're going to live in the world, you live with imperfections. And what is lovable about a person is precisely that cute little twist of the nose that doesn't belong to the Greek tradition. What is lovable is his fault. What is lovable is his humanity. So the distinction between a literary person and a poet, says Tonio, is the distinction between one who sends his words without love and the one who sends his accurate word with the bomb of love on the point. He called this erotic irony, and it's the whole secret of man's technique. And it is beyond the pairs of opposites. It's beyond loathing, it's beyond disdain, it's beyond all of that. And it's beyond desire. It's exactly the balance that Joyce is talking about, only it's presented in a much more human sense. Now, if you're going to say yay to the world, you've got to say yay to the world as it is, not as it would be if you had corrected it. If you're going to marry somebody and marry him, usually it goes this way, to improve him, you're not getting married. You're becoming a reformer here, a sort of medical adjunct. That you marry what you get. One of the problems of early life is that we project this image on someone, that which we think the person ought to be, or which our unconscious tells us the person ought to be, and then what shows through is a fact. It's a little hard to take. We go weeping, we say we are disillusioned. Well, what more would you want in life than to be disillusioned? Let life come through. Sometimes life is horrific. Sometimes terrible things take place. Are you still going to say yay to life? The artist has to say yay. And when he describes the things that go on, these massacres, these horrific accidents, and the mess of political life, he has to say yay. And where he says nay is where he has lost his humanity. Love bears all things, and that means all things. And the measure of the energy of your life, which is the energy of love, of the bodhisattva in you, that which affirms with joyous participation life as it is, this is the measure of your magnitude as a human being and understanding. And it's that that art forces you to develop in yourself. Well, now in conclusion, let me say, after their first works, with these aesthetic theories presented, Mann and Joyce, simultaneously, neither reading the other's works, this I know, brought out within 2 years of each other after the First World War, respectively, Mann, The Magic Mountain, in 1924, Joyce, Ulysses, in 1922. And under the apparent texture of a naturalistic novel, they showed mythic forms showing up. Each used his own technique, but throughout, the mythic theme was showing right up through life, and this is exactly what Jung was finding out at the same time. And in historical studies, Oswald Spengler, in his Morphology of History, at exactly the same time. And then the last great works of Joyce, Finnegan's Wake, which came out in 1939, and of Mann, the Joseph novels from 1933 to 1943, a long, terrible span there, including a world war and terrible things. These two works fell right into the domain of myth, whereas Ulysses and The Magic Mountain show life with myth coming up through it. The other two go down into the myth and show the relationship to life. What I'm trying to say is that from the beginning to the middle of this century, there was a transition in the art of writing into the field of the realization of the positive aspect of mythology for the guidance of life. You get it in the arts also of Klee, Picasso, the Surrealists, and so forth, exactly all this. And finally, on our own West Coast, far, far away from all this, there comes a poem which tells us the same thing. And I was going to conclude, I will conclude, by simply reciting this poem of Robinson Jeffers. It's a tiny little thing called Natural Music. And after what I've told you of the aesthetics of Joyce and this positive and negative business and all that, I think you'll recognize the sense of it. You must remember when I speak of rivers here and streams that we're in a California landscape. And in the wintertime, the sun is bright and the streams and the grass is green. The sun is covered over and the grass is green, and in the summertime the sun is very bright and the grass becomes straw colored. So here's the little poem, Natural Music. The old voice of the ocean and the bird chatter of little rivers. Winter has given them gold for silver to stain their waters and bladed green for brown to line their banks. From different throats and tone one language. And so I believe that if we were strong enough to listen, without divisions of desire and terror, to the song of the sick nations and the rage of the hunger-smitten cities, those voices also would be found clean as a child's, or like some girl's breathing, dancing alone on the ocean shore, dreaming of lovers.
You have been listening to Mythic Literature, the second talk in the series entitled Man and Myth. This recording was authorized by the Joseph Campbell Foundation and produced by Electronic Educational Programs. Our theme music is by Acoustic Alchemy. For more information about the works of Joseph Campbell, please call the Foundation at 1-800-330-MYTH, 1-800-330-MYTH. Or you can contact us on the World Wide Web at jcf.org. I'm Maura Vaughn. Thank you for listening.